What's going on, everyone? It's been a few months off, but Brett and I are back to do the podcast. Just came about this week, and we're going to touch on yesterday's loss, 2022 recruiting, and just a little bit about the LSU and Mel Tucker stuff. How has your week been so far, Brett?
Today's a lot better. Yesterday was obviously not a lot of fun. I think we're going to touch on that in a second here, but today we're starting to gain more ground. We're going to keep chopping, so let's get into it.
No doubt. Yeah, yesterday was, you could have heard an owl in the afternoon in East Lansing. It was so quiet after that game. But the sun shined this morning. And, yeah, let's get right into the game. So, obviously, Michigan State lost 40-29 to Purdue. Alex O'Connell threw for almost 600 yards or whatever it was. But there were a few positives that I saw, Brett. But what were some positives you saw from the game, even though Michigan State did lose?
Yeah, I think one thing we can kind of hang our hat on, the team definitely didn't give up. I think that's kind of been a theme throughout the past few games where they've fallen behind and they don't let an avalanche happen. So we saw it against Michigan where they go down 16 and obviously came back to win that game. But even yesterday when they went down 16 again and they marched right down the field and put up 8 points. So, I mean, you see that this team has a lot of fight in them, and I think another thing is that we were without a lot of players yesterday. And yeah. People like Trey Mosley stepped up. I think Peyton Thorne had a really good game. He was able to find some new weapons. And obviously, I think the emergence of Malik Carr there for a little bit, I think that that's going to be something to look forward to in the coming weeks.
Yeah, that was one of the things I wrote down for my positives was Malik Carr. They got to start using him more. I know people are going to say, well, he can't block as well. But obviously, you saw Brett. He's clearly the fastest tight end we have. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, when the ball is in his hands, he made plays. So I think he definitely has to start, you know, getting more runs. Another positive that I saw, even though the defense was really bad, was Darius Snow. You know, the forced fumble. He's been tackling extremely well. I've been noticing that. And I think he was a lone bright spot. I mean, obviously Xavier Henderson as well. But outside of those two, those were the two bright spots on defense, in my opinion. Darius has definitely played better than I thought he was going to this early on. And then the other positive, obviously, is Kenneth Walker. He, you know, still ran for 140 yards. But another thing that I noticed, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, is I feel like they should start using him more in the passing game. What do you think so, or do you think he's already got a huge load on his hands?
I think sometimes the passing game, it can kind of be substituted for the running game, because if you have these short passes and whatnot, I think that you can utilize those in the event you can't get the run game going, which was kind of when your offensive line has some guys out and you're just not able to get the push. I think that that's going to be helpful. And I mean, Kenneth Walker, he's likely still the Heisman favorite. So any way you can get the ball in his hands, I think that that's something you have to do. And I think he's shown he's only been given so many chances to catch the ball, but when he does, I mean, you get him in the open field and no one's going to be able to tackle him. So I'd like to see it more. I don't know if there's a reason why they kind of don't dump it off to him more, but I guess we'll kind of see moving forward. But yeah, I definitely would like to see a few more dump offs to him.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There were a few positives, like we said, but there also were a lot of negatives. So to get into the negatives, what was your number one, you know, negative from yesterday, or just several you had?
Yeah, I think it's kind of known that the secondary, they've kind of struggled against good passing attacks, but I'm going to say it's more so just the scheme that they're running. Mm-hmm. I think that these corners, they've shown that they can make plays. I mean, you've seen Chuck Brantley make game-winning interceptions, Ronald Williams at times, he's been really, really good. These are talented kids that have played well throughout the year. I think sometimes the scheme has just put them in a really bad situation, and I think just not kind of making any adjustments coming out of halftime was really, really frustrating, especially when you have a true freshman corner going on an island like Revis against one of the best receivers in the Big Ten in Bell. So I think that's just really difficult.
Yeah, I'm still struggling to know, like, think if it's totally the scheme or if it's the personnel, like, why they're giving up so many passing yards, because, I mean, people are, you know, they rip D'Antonio left and right, but the defense was never this bad. I mean, occasionally, you know, you had that Michigan game in the last year, but for the most part, they held their own. And I don't know if it's the, the scheme or if it's the personnel. I'm still trying to figure that part out, like why they're giving up so many explosive plays, like why they, like Xavier Henderson said, the story of the season, why they can't get off the field on third down. It's really bizarre to me. I don't know what the deal is, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, because even, yeah, you sent me the clip of Henderson after the game, and he's saying how they're taking extra reps and kind of simulating third down defense, but it's just not translating to the game. I don't know if there's something on film that maybe the coaches are missing, or, yeah, maybe, like you said, maybe it is still, we need that extra talent in our program. So I just think coming up, you're going to be playing two teams back-to-back with Maryland, and especially Ohio State, where they can, they're gonna make Purdue look like a middle school offense. So I think that it's gonna be really important to kind of, like Coach Tucker said, reevaluate and make the necessary changes there.
Mm-hmm. The two main negatives I had and takeaways from the game, number one, is I told you about five times, I've told everyone this that's asked me, is I cannot believe, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but the lack of depth on this roster is starting to show. And I didn't think it was as bad, but you're starting to see, like you mentioned earlier, Brett, with guys getting injured, you know, they're getting scared to like throw the backups in. And I never knew why, but it clearly, they don't trust any backup on this roster, guys. I mean, I looked at the stats, anyone not named Kenneth Walker this year, and they have like five or six running backs. They don't even have a combined 300 yards between all those backs. And that's including garbage time against Youngstown State, Western Kentucky, all these teams. So I don't, the backup running backs have not shown up at all this year. I know people are going to say, well, they don't have to, Walker, whatever. It's still an issue. And then you look at wide receiver. I mean, I know Mosley stepped up yesterday, but you know, like Keon Coleman, where's, I don't know why they don't throw him out there for a play or two. You know, Foster. Yeah. I know he had a catch, but like, there's just so many, and you obviously not having Ricky White starting to show, in my opinion. The tight end play has been brutal all year. Like, sure, Connor Hayward and Malik Carr had two great catches, but other than that, the tight ends haven't done anything. And same goes for the secondary and the defensive line. Oh my God. I mean, Simeon Barrow goes out. I mean, they were looking at like eight players in the sideline and who to put in. And I'm just like, oh my God. But that's one thing I've noticed, is the lack of depth is starting to show. And it's not like you mentioned earlier, even though Maryland's not Ohio State, they can still throw the ball, guys. So these next three teams, I'm not saying we're going to lose all three, but they're all toss-ups. None of these games are going to be cupcakes the rest of the way.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think one of the things that's really kind of made our defense solid, I mean, you look at the numbers, especially pass rush-wise, they've been one of the best teams in the country. So I think that one of the advantages is what the coaching staff has done well there, is that people, certain players, they can play in certain situations. So it's almost like if you watch hockey, you have line rotations. That's what they do with the D line.
Yeah.
I mean, they run deep there, but when you lose a guy like Barrow and you have to put somebody else in his spot, that shifts everything. Cause then somebody has to take Barrow's spot and who comes in after Barrow. So then everybody has to kind of move to a new role where they're potentially not situated to play in. So it's just kind of an avalanche effect, and that shows, like you said, I think that, I mean, it is still year two, so you're not going to have that depth of, I mean, if you go down, you lose Jalen Naylor in any year, it's going to be difficult. But when you just don't have the guys ready, I mean, everyone's, this team is so young, especially a wide receiver, that, I mean, you lose Naylor, and I mean, you're not going to have a Keon Coleman ready yet. So I think it's a real difficult situation. I think we've been lucky and we've benefited from good health so far, but I mean, you lose a few starters like we have, and it's really difficult to overcome, especially on the defensive side when you're going up against Purdue, who can light up the scoreboard, and they've got NFL talent on that offense. So it's just really difficult.
Yeah, that was just, well, I mean, all the backups, so like Christian Fitzpatrick, Terry Lockett, like you're saying, they're not experienced, but you know, that's where last year would have been very beneficial to throw a lot of these guys out there. And they really didn't, to be honest with you. But it is what it is. I'm sure a lot of these guys are going to improve next year, but right now it's obviously showing the depth is clearly an issue. But do you have any more thoughts on the game? Or?
Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the things that we saw on social media, basically, good job of is not blaming the officials. I think that
yeah.
you kind of look at a few plays there, whether it was the barrel targeting, if the Walker fumble, and even the Reed potentially simultaneous possession. I think that obviously all three of those, we would have liked it to go a different way, but the officials had no impact on the outcome of the game. I think our team, we had so many chances to kind of either, I mean, we tied the game up early in the second half. We had chances to, after we went down eight, when we kind of Walker scored on the fourth down, we had a few chances to stop them on defense, get the ball back, and potentially tie the game again and take some momentum. But yeah, it just didn't work out. So I think that that's going to be on. I'm looking forward to kind of how the team bounces back, because I've seen Maryland this week. I think that it offers a really good chance to try some new things on defense, especially in the secondary, whether it's scheme-wise or personnel, that you can kind of try things out and not really be at risk of dropping a game and just kind of start getting ready for Ohio State, because that's going to be a totally different animal in 2 weeks here.
Yeah, and another thing, too, it's not that big of a deal, but Jay Johnson didn't call the greatest second half. I saw a stat where I think Walker only had 5 carries the entire second half. So, and I was kind of confused by, like Thorne mentioned that in the press conference, that they had like 3 straight 3 and outs after they tied it at 21. And I couldn't remember. I'm like, were they throwing the ball every down? But they must have had to have if he only got 5 carries. So that was another thing. It's not that big of a deal, but Johnson has to start mixing it up like he's done and shown against, you know, trick plays against Michigan or whatever the case may be. He's got to step, have his foot on the gas pedal for all 4 quarters going forward.
Yeah, I think I thought Jay Johnson, he's been my MVP of the year. I think he's easily been like the brightest and biggest surprise from last year, where he wasn't able to just run an offense based on the lack of depth and skill and preparation time and implementation and all that. But I think he's done terrific this year. And I think yesterday, I think some of the reason they kind of abandoned the run at times is just because missing Horst is huge. He's your best run blocker. I think some of the guys up front, they had difficulty with Karlofkas, which is a trend because he's going to be top 15 pick in the draft. So I think that they tried to mitigate that impact with kind of these short passes and trying to take shots over the top that just weren't there. I mean, Purdue's secondary is really, really good. So yeah, I think, I mean, I'm kind of looking forward to next week and seeing how they bounce back, especially like we said, defense. And then I think Jay Johnson, that's my guy. So I think he's got something planned for next week that we'll get this thing back on track.
Absolutely. Jay Johnson's had a hell of a year. You know, a half of football's not going to derail my like confidence in him moving forward, like you said. But enough of the game. Now let's get into some 2022 recruiting. You know, Michigan State's, they're stepping up recruiting, Brett. Like we mentioned in the summer, they're ranked top 20 right now. It says they have 21 commits, but that's factoring in Holloman. So they have 20 commits right now, and essentially they're basically after 5 guys now. I mean, they, you know, it's kind of, you know, the staff's not going to come out and tell you who the 5 are, but every fan that follows recruiting realistically knows. The first guy we have to talk about is, I think he's the closest one to possibly making, his decision, is Caleb Coley, who recently decommitted for Vanderbilt. So what's your thoughts on Caleb, and, you know, when do you think you could see a decision from him?
Yeah, I think I think we're in the driver's seat there. I trust Corey, Justin, and kind of the guys over at 247 who put in the crystal balls for a flip. I think that they have a really good pulse on kind of where he's leaning, or rather where he's favorited to go. So I think hopefully we can kind of get that commitment this week. I tweeted earlier that hopefully we get another gift parade from the staff this week, and I think that he would probably be the one that would kind of warrant that. So hopefully that happens this week. And in terms of the prospect, he is, I mean, top 500 kid. His recruitment's kind of blown up late, so that's why you're seeing the flip from Vandy. I mean, kid's super talented, and I think he has the potential. We have quite a few DBs coming in next year. I think he has the most potential to be a day one starter just based off of kind of his film. And, I mean, you see all these teams offering him now, so I think the writing's on the wall that this kid is – legit D1 talent, potential NFL player down the road.
Yeah, like Brett just brought up, guys. I think – I don't know why he ended up committing to Vanderbilt. I mean, they have great academics, but, you know, he holds offers from, like, Wisconsin. I think he got offered by Auburn and Georgia when he was committed to Vanderbilt. He also has a Clemson offer, but, you know, he's, like Brett said, he plays great competition in Georgia. I think he attends the same high school as, like, Jake Fromm played at, Warner Robins, so it's really a competition. But, yeah, whenever Caleb and I'm you know, confident, like you said, that it will be Michigan State, but it's just a matter of when. And they're trying to flip a lot of guys. Another guy is Zion Young, who not a lot of fans knew his name until about, I don't know, 2.5 weeks ago. He's still committed to West Virginia, defensive end, also from Georgia. But he visited for the Michigan game, and he had great things to say. But he's also reinforced that, you know, he's West Virginia's been there since day one, and that matters a lot to him. I really don't know what to, you know, gauge off Zion. I'm sure you probably have more than I do there, because I really didn't know who he was until like 2 weeks ago, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, that's another kid from Georgia. So you're starting to see a trend here where the staff is really going down south to try to get these kids, because I know we kind of joke about this on MSU Twitter. I think I've alluded to this before, but a 3-star in Georgia, that's like a high 4-star in Michigan. So, I mean, it's these kids, they play such good competition, and the depth is unreal down there. So you get a kid like Zion Young, who kind of comes on late, is a high school prospect, and he's just growing into his body. I mean, he's built like an NFL D lineman already. I mean, 6'5", 230, runs well, moves well, he's got good bend. So I think that if you can try to flip him and try to bolster that defensive line coming up, because you're going to be losing some guys. And I think that's you can never have too many pass rushers. So I don't think his ranking is indicative of the type of player he is. And that's going to be the case for 95% of players. But yeah, I think hopefully they can kind of gain more ground there and get him to flip, because I think he's a really talented prospect. And you kind of look at his timeline in terms of recruiting, it's kind of similar to Coley, where you get some of these offers a little bit later on. And that kind of shows that people are starting to take stock into the work he's put in leading up to his junior and senior years here.
Yeah, as Brett just mentioned, Zion recently just got, you know, he's been committed to West Virginia since I think early summer, or maybe earlier than that, but just recently just randomly got a Michigan State and Missouri offer. Missouri has actually a really good recruiting class. They just got a 5-star, so although Missouri's down on the field, their recruiting's been really well. But another thing I wonder with Zion, though, is say he does end up committing, then that would be 3 DNs in the class. Obviously, they just got James Shutt, I think is his name, and then Chase Carter. You know, like you said, they are losing 4, but if they take 3 DNs, how many do you think they still take, you know, 2 from the portal? Like, I'm kind of intrigued by that logic, you know. Or do you think it gets Zion, they're going to take 2 no matter what from the portal?
Yeah, I would probably lean towards they're going to take 2 from the portal. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert in kind of on the COVID rules and the extra years. I probably don't anticipate too many of the DNs they have now returning, whether it's Panishuk, Beasley, Jordan. I don't think those 3 are going to be returning, whether it's due to just them trying to move on to the next phase or staff might not seeing a fit there. So I think they're just going to try to get as much new blood in here as possible. And so I think taking 3 DNs and 2 of the 3 probably have a chance to play really early. And then you kind of get 2 out of the portal, and whatever class they're in, I mean, you're going to intend for them to start right away as well. So there's going to be a ton of opportunity for whoever comes in, whether it's the recruits or especially transfers, that they're going to be day one starters potentially. So I think that's going to lead to us landing some really nice players in the portal as well.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Jack Camper, another DN, he doesn't play as much, but it's still another scholarship. So I think Beasley, Jordan, and Panishuk, I think they all are capped out. I don't think they could return if they wanted to. I think all of them are old enough. I think Beasley might be a 6-year senior. So, yeah, definitely going to see a lot of new names out there next year there. Hopefully Tank Brown is the name you're going to see. But the next name, I mean, every Spartan fan knows this name by now, is Amari. So Amani Winfield, he's a 4-star right now. He's committed to Texas, wide receiver. You know, he visited in the summer. He also came out for the Western Kentucky game, teased it on his Instagram with, you know, he was in Detroit. I know you sent me that. I don't know. I mean, it's looking good for Michigan State with Amani. If he were to commit, he'd be the 4th wide receiver in the class. What are your thoughts there? I think Michigan State is sitting in a really good position myself.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there, Spencer. I think it's we're kind of seeing flashbacks to a certain linebacker who flipped on signing day last year. I think that that's kind of where this thing's trending. I don't think we're going to see a true decommitment than commitment to Michigan State, but I think if it's going to happen, which I think it, I would say it's probably over 50% now that it does happen. I think that's something we would see on actual signing day as a surprise.
Yeah, I agree with you there. He's been pretty quiet with his whole recruitment. You know, he doesn't like a lot of the attention when people, you know, reporters reported and stuff. But I mean, in the summer, I would have told you guys probably like a 10%, but now it's probably, I'd say at least, you know, like you said, at least 50, somewhere around that. But my money there would be that Michigan State does flip him. I think I have more confidence in him flipping than I do Zion Young. And that may sound dumb, but that's just how confident I am in Michigan State there.
Yeah, and I think that there's kind of, like you mentioned, kind of with Zion Young and West Virginia's been there from the start. They've been really loyal to him. They haven't kind of recruited his position. But I think the same cannot be said with Texas, especially. I mean, we talk about this. It seems once a week they're offering another kid who's ranked higher than Winfield. So
yeah,
I think that he potentially is slighted by that. I don't know that for a fact, but that's just kind of the vibe I get from some of his cryptic posts on social medias. So I think that, I think that there's definitely a better chance to flip Winfield. And I do think he's going to end up in the green and white.
Yeah. Another thing, too, with him is Texas is having an atrocious season. I think they're like 4-5 right now. They got yesterday. So, you know, I know they're going to the SEC in a few years, but I don't know. I think Sark's going to be good for them there, but I don't know. That has to be probably going through his mind. But the next name, another name that Michigan State fans have been, you know, I guess the Imani Bates of this class they've called, and that's Keontae Goodwin, 5-star offensive tackle. Currently committed to Kentucky, visited Michigan State for the Michigan game. Kentucky's also on a 3-game losing streak themselves. You know, I'm still trying to figure out where I sit with him. I know if you talk to a few of the 24/7 guys at Michigan State, you know, Corey and them. Corey's really tied in with this recruitment. You know, they've made it known that Michigan State, that Kentucky and Alabama are like the three potential landing spots if he were to flip. I'm starting to think Michigan State is surpassing Alabama, as crazy as that may sound. But what do you think here, Brett? I'm like 50-50 on it.
Yeah, this is a really interesting one. And I think it's kind of fitting for the type of player he is, because Goodwin right now, I mean, whenever he's draft eligible, whether it's 25, 2025, 2024, whichever one after his junior year, I think that he's going to be a top three, potentially number one overall pick. So we don't really get to see those as much at Michigan State, or we haven't in recent years. So, but yeah, in terms of where he kind of stands at his recruitment, something tells me he's not going to end up at Kentucky. I don't know what it is. It just doesn't seem to fit with kind of how his recruitment's gone. And the fact that he's visited Michigan State twice unofficially on his own dime, and he even brought one of his mentors with him, not sure his Twitter handle, something Vaughn. But yeah, they were here for the weekend. I know that they had a really good time. A little inside info. I know Mr. Goodwin consumed 7 chicken sandwiches during the game, which is it's an incredible feat. And so I think that needs to be potentially added to his 247 profile there. But I mean, in terms of passing Alabama, I think the one huge benefit we have is playing time. Like he kind of mentioned in his profile with Steve Wilfong the other day that he it's plug and play. So Goodwin, you want to play left tackle day one, go for it. You want to try out center, hey, you can play there too. I mean, you're going to be able to pick wherever you want to play and just start there day one. So I think we're really going to get a better idea in the next 3-4 weeks here, especially when he takes his official visit. I think it's weekend of December 10th. So yep. I think that's going to be a huge indicator of where this thing's going to be going.
Yep. Brett brought up the icing on the cake point that I was going to bring up too, is that December 10th weekend. So that weekend is going to be December 10th, where all the Michigan State 2022 commits that haven't used their official visit, they're trying to plan something like they did with that SpartanCon thing, and I think it was the end of June or end of July. So that's what they're trying to get Goodwin up there for his official visit, to visit with all the commits. I think luckily Gavin Brosinkis and Christian Phillips are the only, not only two, but the only two offensive linemen that haven't used their officials. So that'll be perfect for Goodwin to hang out with them. Oh, another thing too is, where did you find this information out about the sandwiches? That's another thing I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, I can't reveal that. but yeah, that's just a little tidbit of information I got as I tried to poke and see what's going on with Mr. Goodwin here.
That's hilarious. I don't think I can eat that many in a day. So that's pretty remarkable on his end. But and the last guy, the name I wrote down, I think is the least likely. And that's a name that Michigan State just jumped into, 5-star linebacker Harold Perkins. He could be a running back. I don't know if you saw that video yesterday of him. Just, I think he rushed for like 250 yards, and that's against Texas competition, guys. You may know more about this than I do, but I believe he was offered the same weekend Tucker went out and watched Armani Winfield. And he's also trying to get – he didn't make it for the Michigan game, but I think his uncle or his father, I can't remember who, has been on record stating they still want to visit Michigan State. I'd look at him as possible December 10th official visit as well. And after that, you just can hope for the best. But as of right now, I put Texas A&M as the leader, as I told you yesterday, probably.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with you. I would say we're probably, Texas A&M is probably the solid leader there, whether we're second or third on his list right now, even without a visit. I think that's a huge testament to the staff and kind of their ability to just generate interest in the program. But it's going to come down to that December 10th weekend. I think if you can get him and Goodwin here at the same time and kind of talk them into being the two stars of kind of this rebuild alongside of Caden Hauser, I think that those would be three. I mean, you're talking about three blue chip NFL, future NFL stars that you could have all in the same class. And I think that you can convince them that they're the face of the program, which is it true if they go to other schools? Like if you go to Alabama, you could be the face of the program for a couple of years, but that legacy isn't something that you're going to be the face of the program for decades. Like you could at Michigan State as being a Keontae Goodwin or Harold Perkins or Caden Hauser, where you're going to be immortalized forever. So I think that's kind of a huge selling point. And it's especially another thing I think is kind of underrated is the job that Michigan State's done with NIL, where everyone's getting – I mean, these guys are making really good money for college kids. I mean, everyone on the team, they have to deal with, the whole their mortgage, so they get their $500 plus stipend a month. Then you get guys like Keon Coleman who have, he's probably up over a dozen different sponsorships now. So, I mean, these guys are making so much money. And, I mean, you get a guy like Keontae Goodwin here, he's going to be making six figures as just a college star.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be the face of the state. Basically, so I think that's a huge selling point and something they can kind of aim to put on full display that weekend he visits.
Yeah, that's, with Harold Perkins, like you said, if we're the second team, essentially it's just going to be – I think it's just going to be too hard to pull him from the South if he doesn't visit. You know, if he visits, you know, it's fair game. But other than Texas A&M, I'd say, like, Michigan State's on par with, you know, maybe Texas and LSU, but – who knows what's going to happen at LSU? We're going to talk. To your point about Goodwin, you know, I was obviously talking to Corey Robinson, and, you know, this isn't breaking news, but like you mentioned earlier, there's a really good chance he's could start as a true freshman at left tackle with AJ Arcuri leaving. And Corey brought that up, and I didn't think about it. Like, oh, shit, like, he actually probably would start next year as a true freshman. So that's a legit selling point. Obviously, I'm sure if I can figure that out, Chris Kapilovich is probably drilling that through his head every other day of the week. So, yeah, I mean, we talked about five guys that they're going after. How many realistically do you think they're going to get, Brett, out of the five that we just touched?
Oh, you put me on the spot. man, that's tough. I think Coley, I think that's a really good bet.
Yeah.
I think Winfield, I think we're in a good shot there. I think the goal should be three.
Yep.
So I think it's going to be Coley, Winfield, and then I think you want to get one more. Good one, I would probably. If I could pick, it'd be Goodwin. But if I was putting odds on this, I would probably put the third one at being Zion Young, just based off of, I think it's just easier to beat out West Virginia for a kid who's even already committed there. But yeah, I think Winfield and Coley, I think that those are more than 50% chance to become Spartans. Coley, I would put that closer to like 99 based off of Justin and Corey. Shout out to them. Yeah, but that's kind of how I would handicap it. Not sure how you feel about it.
Yeah, the thing is, like, I just don't know with Goodwin. You know, I feel really confident with, obviously, Coley, like you mentioned. Winfield, I'd say I've always felt pretty good, you know, just of how much they've prioritized him. And he's made that known on Twitter when he said, "I feel the love." Obviously, Michigan State fans can assume that was from Courtney Hawkins and Tucker going out there and visit him on their bye week. You know, I don't know what to make of Zion Young. Like, I don't know how hard they're going after him. You know, people can say they're going after him hard, but now you have two defensive ends committed, and they very well could be going after him harder than ever. But I would say at least, like you mentioned, four at the most, and the least likely, like I said, Perkins. But with Goodwin, I don't want to come on here and be like Sam Webb, you know, and just say to you guys, oh, like, Michigan State's the clear-cut, like, front, you know, flip candidate. Like, I really don't know. Like, he's still got visits to Ohio State and Michigan. I don't think they're both players in here, but you never know. And I just don't know. I think, you know, that's what I forgot to bring up, and I know this is off topic with Goodwin, but Corey also mentioned this to me when I asked him. He's going to be, and this is probably very, you know, valid right now, but he's going to be a guy where he's deciding by early national signing period next month, because he wants to early enroll in January. So that's actually very, very beneficial for Michigan State. And that's why I think Goodwin has a really good chance, a pretty good chance of coming to Michigan State. So I'll put the number at 3.5. 3.5 is my prediction.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be just a really exciting next, what, I think we got, what, a month, month and a week here?
Yeah.
So 5-6 weeks. I think it's going to be potentially the most fun in recent memory of MSU recruiting. I mean, there's a chance to add to make this class the best we've seen since early 2000s. So
yep.
I'm ecstatic about it.
And the last thing I have on Perkins is, you know, I saw today that he's not going to be announced until January 2nd. So he's the only guy where we can legitimately say we'll not have a decision by early signing day. What is it, December 15th or something around there? But I think Goodwin's going – what is it?
Yeah, December 15th.
Okay, so he's the only one. I think Goodwin's going to be deciding by then, which is beneficial. But, yeah. And the last thing I didn't care to touch on, but Brett said we should talk about it, and that's LSU and Mel Tucker. So what are your thoughts on the whole Mel Tucker and LSU gibberish thus far?
Yeah, I think the reason I want to talk about it, I think it's important for our fan base to kind of understand that this is the territory that comes with being a high-level program. I think it's more so this talk is really complimentary of the job our program's done, kind of putting the resources in front of kind of this new regime where they can kind of come in and have a great staff, they can exceed expectations, and they can build top-flight facilities. So I think that it's just a testament to the program that's Michigan State's taking a big step with kind of the funding there. So first off, I just want to say that this is going to come. This is not going to be just a one-year thing. It's just not an LSU thing. Every time a big job opens, people are going to start mentioning Mel Tucker, and that's also going to include the NFL. So I highly suggest our fan base, they stop acting like puddle people and they get ready and go into the deep waters here, because this is going to happen year in and year out. As far as my concern level, I would put it at maybe zero, maybe a one. I mean, it's pretty low just based off of, I know Coach Tucker, his commitment level to this program, some of the stuff Justin and Corey have alluded to in terms of kind of doing fundraising and traveling to build a new facility. I know that they're planning to break ground on that in the next few months here. So, and that's going to be potentially one of the top three in the nation. So I think that that's a huge benefit. And Coach Tucker, I know his relationship with new AD Alan Haller is, I mean, they're basically best friends. I know he's Coach Tucker. You can call it Matt Ishbia anytime. And that's you have a billionaire on speed dial. That's definitely not something you can get anywhere. And I think that he has a chance to really cement his legacy as the greatest coach in modern Michigan State Day history. So I think that those things are playing to our advantage. And I think LSU, obviously, it's a great job. But, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on down there that is definitely not appealing to any coaching candidate. So, but, I mean, LSU, they're going to hire a great coach, but it's just it's not going to be Mel Tucker. So people do not need to worry about that. I do think it's flattering that they're considering him or his name's coming up, but that move is something that's not going to happen.
I think the only way, and I told you this, that I would start to worry, and you're not going to be able to, you know, hear it out. It's not going to be said in the press, is if, you know, just say Michigan State was to become cheap again, like they were under D'Antonio, then I'd start to worry. Because that's one thing we should mention. Michigan State's going to have to pay up, guys. It just is what it is. Like, I mean, that's my opinion, Brett. Like, regardless of what happens at LSU, I think he's going to get another raise at Michigan State. You know, whether that raise is $1 million or if it's another $5 million a year, I don't know, but they're going to have to raise. I know that for a fact. But another thing too, like, what if Dan Mullen gets fired at Florida? You know, I mean, Florida's going to, I'm not worrying about him going to Florida, but he's going to might get his name brought up in that one too. And that's going to totally kill the season if they fire Dan Mullen, you know, early, because now he's going to be like thrown into that job and LSU, and then they got to focus on Ohio State and recruiting. So that's my biggest worry right now. Like, if also Mullen gets fired, his name's probably going to get thrown up in there. But the only advantage LSU really has, and I wouldn't say it's really even an advantage, is Scott Woodward, the athletic director. Like you said, he's going big bag hunting. He's going to get his guy. And basically, he has a blank check, guys. So if he wants to pay a coach $13 million a year, they're going to do it. Whether Michigan State's going to match him, I think they will match, you know, whatever, if LSU is to even offer him the job. But that's my only worry, guys, is if Michigan State just says, screw it, we're going to be cheap, and they don't pay him, then, yeah, maybe he could leave. But if they pay him like we think they're going to, Brett, I personally am not that worried either.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And I think really one thing that can just be done now is you call Coach Tucker, you call his agent tomorrow, and you schedule a meeting and you offer him a $2 million raise, which yep. takes him into the top five in the country. So I know what you got. I'm looking at a sheet now where Dan Mullen, he's making 7.5. Lincoln Riley's at 7.6. If you put Tucker right there and you make that buyout something crazy, then he's going to be your coach for, at least 3-4 more years without any concerns. So that's the one way to kind of alleviate all concerns. But I mean, I'm personally not worried about it. It just, I think it's just, there's so much talk and his name keeps popping up. I think it's more so potentially his agent trying to just get some leverage, and because, I mean, he's going to be due for a raise, and what's the best way to get a raise rather than kind of build competition and have Michigan State think that potentially some team's going to come get him. So, I mean, but I do expect Michigan State to pony up here in the next week or two. And here's some things start coming out about an extension. So, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Michigan State, they've shown that they're willing to spend, and it's time to do it now and lock your guy up and let the world and nation show, let them know that, hey, Michigan State, we're at the big boy table now. And I mean, we're not going anywhere. So it's a chance for the university to show that they mean business.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess I only get concerned when, you know, it's just I don't know how to word it, but like the lack of the unknown. When you get Bruce Feldman throwing these names around, it's like, how the hell is he getting, not that he's getting this information, but it's like, you just don't know what's going to happen. That's where I get nervous. Like, if Michigan State says, hey, we don't want to pay you $9 million a year, then I'm like, then you got to be like, holy shit. But that's a big if, you know, and I'm just throwing big ifs around, but that's my only concern. I think they're going to pay him, like you said. But I honestly, Brad, and I told you this earlier, I think that number is going to be it's going to have to be more than that. I think they're going to have to get in the 8.5s to keep, to not keep him. I don't want to say that, but you know, you just never know. Like if that Florida job opens up, that's just going to worry me more because of how much you're going to have to commit to him, like the money wise. And there's going to be those fans that are going to say, you know, how are you going to pay a coach, whatever, $7.5 to $9 million a year that has, what, 15 career wins? That's going to be brought up, but I think at the end of the day, he's going to be the coach. I'm not that concerned with them leaving. I'm just concerned more with Michigan State being, like, cheap. That's, and they've been cheap in the past, but now you got Ishba, like you said, the $80 million football facility and his relationship with Allen Howler. I think those are going to be too much if LSU or Florida, whoever the hell it is, even offers them a job. Those are probably going to be too much to overcome, in my, like you mentioned, in my opinion.
Yeah, and one more thing that potentially could benefit Michigan State here is that, I mean, all these jobs opening, and, I mean, you look at it, I mean, Florida could potentially open, which could lead to another job opening that could lead to James Franklin going to Florida. I mean, there's going to be so many moving parts. And one thing I'm really optimistic about is that we're going to be able to go to these schools where they're losing coaches. Let's say Cristobal goes to LSU. You're going to be able to go to Oregon staff and poach whoever you want. So whether they have a recruiting coordinator there that you really like, bring them to Michigan State. They have an area scout. They have a secondary coach, whoever it is. You're going to be able to go to all these schools and offer them whatever their salary is. Hey, we'll raise it by 30%. Come to Michigan State. So I think that's something I'm really looking forward to in terms of the coaching search.
Yeah, that's a good point too, because I legitimately think Franklin would be the front runner for Florida. I think that's a really good point. And I think Mullen's getting fired. That's why I brought Florida up, guys. I mean, after yesterday, I think he's definitely going to leave. I think Franklin would be a name. I think Cristobal would be more likely at Florida than LSU just because he played at Miami and he coached at Florida International. I think that would be more likely, but I don't think he is going to leave Oregon. My brother's a diehard Oregon fan, so he keeps being the loop there, and they just made a commitment to him. So it's going to be interesting. I really don't know who LSU is going to – I know who they're going to go after, but I don't think – you know, I don't think Jimbo's leaving, as I told you. I don't think Tucker will leave. You know, I don't think it's going to be like Luke Fickell. I really don't know. They might end up striking out and getting like, you know, a Billy Napier type of coach. No disrespect to him, but like you mentioned, their AD's going after the big ones.
Yeah, and I think potentially they hire a name we haven't even discussed yet.
Yeah.
I mean, we've texted about it. I mean, I don't think it's going to be Urban, but I'm sure they're going to try. I really don't think it's going to be Joe Brady. That one just doesn't make sense to me. I think really the sleeper is potentially Brian Kelly at Notre Dame. I think that there's a lot of talk of him being a lifer there, but in my opinion, I think he's peaked at Notre Dame. I think that they've kind of reached their ceiling there. And I mean, if I'm not sure exactly what he's making now, he's not in the top 10. So when you go and offer him a check for, hey, here's 10 years, $111 million or whatever, here, come run the LSU program, you're not turning that down. I mean, Notre Dame, it's one of the blue chip jobs, but I mean, you go to LSU, it's just a different beast. So I think he's a potential name there. I mean, I've heard talk of Doug Peterson, the former Eagles coach, potentially being a guy there. Oh. He's from the South. He's from Louisiana. So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of names that we haven't heard. And here's my thing. For anybody who's still concerned after Spencer and I, we've kind of talked you off the ledge here, but you don't fire a national championship winning coach to go get a potential unknown. And that's still kind of what Coach Tucker is.
I mean, and that's what worries me, though. It's just like you don't know who they're going after. That's what I get so worried about. Like, you know, in my mind, I'm like, there's no way he's going to leave. But then I'm like, I read these reports. It's like, holy shit. Like, who? You see all these names getting brought up. And that's where I worry. Like, who? If we knew, like, all right, they're going after this, like, if it was, like, a recruit where it's, like, you're down to these schools, but when you just don't know, like you're saying, it just complicates everything. But, no, guys, I don't think Tucker's leaving. I'm just saying there obviously is going to be cause for concern no matter what, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, and this is going to happen multiple times a year moving forward. I mean, I saw Coach Tucker today. He's on an NFL list of potential hires that they're going to be passing around the team, so – I'm sure his name's going to get brought up in NFL coaching searches. I don't think it's going to be this offseason, but I'm sure next year. I mean, if that Bears job opens, I know I do believe that potentially is his dream job. I know he's worked there as a DC and it didn't go well, but I mean, this is just what's going to happen. I mean, we've seen it with the Puddle program down the road with Michigan. We've seen it with Jim Harbaugh the second he's gotten there. He's gotten mentioned for every job.
Every year. Yeah.
He was even brought up for the Lions job last year. Rumors he was going to become the GM, president, and coach. I mean, it's just what happens. Agents do this to get their coaches more money. And I just don't the Tucker to LSU thing just doesn't make sense right now. So
no,
my level of concern, it goes down by the day. It started as a 2, now it's closer to 0, but until we announce that extension, which I do think will come before the end of the month, until then, it's just going to keep getting talked about.
Yeah. Yeah, and guys, before you guys go say, oh, I said this, like, I know people do that. They pick and part, put it on the board. All I said was my only concern is if Michigan State becomes cheap. And lately they have not been cheap. They haven't been cheap in years, Brett. That'd be my only concern. But if they pay up, which I think they're going to, then yes, I don't think there's any reason to worry. And they should. The goal should be, and you're smart enough to know this, guys. I mean, the goal should be and probably will be that they get this extension done at the latest by December, like you said. But
yeah, and I think especially for recruiting purposes.
Yep.
Because you're going to want all that momentum going into early signing day. So I mean, if you can announce that extension before December 10th, especially when you're going to have that huge weekend. I think that potentially is going to be a huge boon. And who knows? I mean, you might be able – if LSU doesn't have a coach by then, you can always use it to your advantage that Jimbo could go there, which Jimbo's not going to go to LSU.
You're finally off the ledge.
Yeah, you've definitely pitched your case for that. So I put that at like 1% as well. But I think that even if he hasn't, I mean, he's shown that he's willing to do it. So in terms of flip jobs, so – I think that you can kind of use that to your advantage in the Perkins recruitment. But, I'm just kind of looking forward to getting Coach Tucker extended here and seeing kind of how that impacts recruitment.
Yeah. It sounds funny, but I'm more excited about that in early signing day than I am for Saturday's game. And it sounds crazy to say that, but I don't know what it is, dude. I'm really excited about the future. If, you know, Michigan State ends up not making the playoffs, you know, it's still a hell of a year from the guys, probably going to finish top 15. I think if Michigan State were to go 10-2, I think they would still go to the Rose Bowl. I could be mistaken, but either way, you know, Rose Bowl, whatever the case may be, this has been a way better year than any of us could have predicted. I think we can all agree.
Oh, my God. I mean, there's no denying it. I mean, I've had so much fun with this year, and obviously we just came off really kind of a heartbreaking loss just yesterday, but as we're recording this Sunday night, but I mean, kind of looking forward to it. I think we're going to beat Maryland. Well, when we go to Ohio State, I think we can give them some problems. I'm not going to predict us to win that game. I'm also not going to say we're going to lose that game. I think that we have the weapons. I think we have the talent and the coaching staff to kind of give them a run for their money there. And Penn State week, the last week of the year, I think we're going to win that game. So, I mean, all of our goals are still in front of us. I know that sounds really cliche, but I mean, it's going to be a fun end of the stretch here. I mean, this is kind of what you hope for as a college fan, that your team's in contention to win a conference, a division, as well as make the playoff.
Yep, exactly. November Madness, as they said. Yes. But exactly. That's really all I got to add on this podcast. Do you have any last closing words, Brett?
No, I appreciate you recording with me tonight. It's been a couple weeks, months here, but yeah. Glad we got to kind of do this again. And I'm sure as things kind of ramp up with recruiting, I know that that's what most of my DMs on Twitter are about. They're about recruits. So
yeah.
I think that as that kind of ramps up, we can potentially do this some more.
Yeah, I think closer to sign day, we'll try and get – I know you guys will love it. We'll try and get one of, you know, Justin or someone on here that follows the recruiting very, very closely. You know, talk about that. I think that'd be a good episode to do. But other than that, yeah, I mean, you know, it's first one back, so hopefully